Let's start the meeting. Welcome to the Wollongong Local Planning Panel. We're a full panel. We have all signed a document that says we have no conflicts of interest in either of the matters on the agenda. We have two items on the agenda. By the way, our names are in front, so I don't need to repeat those. Two items on the agenda, and we will be considering those items in order. And I have people to speak on both of those items. So what I'll do is when I call the item, I'll then call the people on the list to come and sit at the front and then make their representation. I think you have 5 minutes to make your representation. The panel may or may not have some questions of you after that. And then what we will do is we will hear all two items and then we will close the meeting and deliberate, and the decisions that we make will be put on the website within a few days, usually within the week. Where are we? We're Wednesday. Usually within the week. Now, I think Council wants to make some statement in relation to the first item, 20 Yonge Street, so perhaps I'll just a clarification before we move on.
Yeah, Madam Chair, panel. There's been an omission in the report. There should have been a section entitled Clause 4.3, which should have had a discussion on the height of buildings and the permitted heights. The permitted height in the area is 60 metres and the building is below that, so I just wanted to confirm that with the panel.
Thank you. I did note that that was the plans, and being aware of the controls, I realised that that was the height limit, but I just wanted to just clarify that in public.
Thank you. That
is the actual control.
Yes, it is.
Thank you. Any other questions you want to ask of Councillor Self?
So what is the actual height of the building?
It should be depicted on those plans.
It's below the 60 metre.
It is below, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. By a number of stories, possibly in the order of two stories. Yeah. Thank you.
Probably in the order of more than two stories. I'd say about three, four, yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I'll ask the applicant specifically. Okay, in relation to item one, which is 20 to 26 Yonge Street, Wollongong, I have two people who would make submissions, and then I have two people who say they're here to answer questions, which they might need to do. The first person I have to speak is a Chris Yang. All right, okay, please come forward.
The address is 2212 Yonge Street. So in my submission, I had a few concerns, but reading the assessment report, I don't think any of them get answered properly. That's why I'm here, just to clarify. So because of time, I just put up two or three points that I would like to ask. First one is about the nature of lighting. So when I wrote my submission letter, I clearly referred that to Australian Construction Building Code 2019, and in that code, it used an average daylight factor as a calculation, and it requires all the buildings under Class 2, 3, 4, Part, and Class 9 need to have no less than 2%. So based on this, I've done a calculation.
2% what?
2% average daylight factor, which is the equation stated in the Australian National Building Code. So according to this building code, I've done a calculation based on what we have now and comparing to if we have the proposed construction building on number 20 Yonge Street. So currently, from my calculation, I can tell we have about 7% of average daylight factor. But because of the 15-story building in front of us on the south side, this factor is going to be reduced to 0.06%, which is far less than 2%. So, but on the assessment report, it didn't mention anything about the average daylight factor. It used the word as overshadowing. So I don't think that's the right word to use.
Perhaps I'll clarify that the criteria under which solar access to this building and any other building has to be considered is the Australian, the ADG, the Apartment Design Guide. The Building Code of Australia is the construction tool, and any building has to comply with that. That is not being assessed under this application, but the Apartment Design Guide is the test against which it has to be tested. And in this particular case, this building complies.
I'm not talking about this building we proposed on 20 Young Street.
I understand you're talking about the impact it will have on other buildings, and that's why there are sun access plans in the diagrams which demonstrate the impact it will have on other buildings.
Yeah, I understand that, but that's going to affect all the natural light in our building. So what I'm saying is if we lose from 7% to less than 1% average daylight factor, then that means that natural light in our building will be significantly reduced, and we're going to need to some upgrade in our building to improve our daily life.
What I was trying to clarify is that that is not the standard against which this application is being assessed. You're referring to an Australian standard?
Australian National Building Code. I believe every building needs to apply to that code.
It's not something against which this is being assessed.
That's something I don't understand. I think that needs to put onto the report
I need to clarify this. The Building Code of Australia is a construction code against which any building has to be constructed, and there are a whole range of criteria that they must comply with, and it's a given that they will comply with those, otherwise this building cannot be built. There are some performance criteria as well. That is not being assessed here. It's a given that it will comply with those. In terms of the development application, the criteria for assessment of a development application is the apartment design guide, in this case, because it's a residential flat building. And in this case, this building has been assessed against that.
Okay. If that's the case, could we put that onto our assessment report so we can refer to that in the future if it's required?
Sorry, I don't understand the question.
According to what you just explained, which guide we need to follow, is that on the assessment report?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The apartment design guide is considered in the report. And I'll highlight it for you. Yes, I think it's attachment 3. Yes, attachment 3, the ADG type table. Further to that, because it is a residential flat building and over a certain scale and height, the application was submitted to and considered by the Design Excellence Panel, and they have raised a few issues that have been considered, and I will be asking the applicant about how they've addressed that in relation to those aspects, part of the design of the building. So they've actually been considered as a design excellence criteria and fully against the apartment design guide.
Okay.
Attachment 3.
So I'll just give a quick example. If that's the case, if we're going to build another building right in front of us, then we still need to consider what's the natural light requirement for our building, which is already existing over there.
When you say we are going to build, you're going to develop a development?
No, someone is going. Right. A construction company is going to build a building right in front of us, for example.
Mm-hmm.
What code do we need to follow?
They are required to consider and look at the impact of that building on the living and private open space of adjoining developments as well.
Yeah, so what's the criteria for that one, which is not explained in this report?
Both of those have to be considered, so they have to look at the impact that they have to identify. In relation to solar access, there's a whole range of things they have to look at, but one is the quantum of solar access, and that is there is a way of measuring that, solar access to the living room and private open space of the proposed development, and also the impact that it will have on any existing adjoining residences, and to the same extent.
What's a quantify?
It's the same
numbers.
It's the same number. It's a guideline. It's not hard and fast, but it's 70% 2 hours midwinter. Solar access.
Is that on this report again?
They may not have been. I don't know. But
That's what I'm trying to say. There's not enough details on this report for me to fully understand what's the impact for us, which coding we are following, what kind of calculations we need to consider to the impact of our building on the 2 to 12 Yonge Street.
So where are you relative to this site again? Could you come and show us on this plan? Okay, so then if you're north of the site, then you won't be affected at all.
Well, sunlight.
In sunlight.
No, but I'm not talking about sunlight. I'm talking about the nature of lighting.
Sunlight is the test against which it is measured.
That's not right. In the report, as I said, it used the word as overshadowing. Overshadowing means the sunlight direction.
No, I understand.
So in our case, it doesn't matter what you built over there. It's not going to overshadowing onto our building.
Correct.
No.
Correct.
So, for example, if you build a building right in front of us, even blocking my window, technically it's not overshadowing us.
Correct.
But that will block all the light going into our unit. That's something I think we need to quantify the calculation to make sure we comply to standards.
Are you just the small houses?
No, in the tall building, the people care building.
How far away are you?
Just opposite the street. I think it's about 40 meters away.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. I hear your concern.
Yeah. All I ask is more details.
Okay.
Okay, so the other point is I raised some concern about the risk of foundation movement. So I'm worried about when you guys do the construction on the 20 of Yonge Street, that's going to have a continuous draining of water, I guess about 8 meters based on the height of the building. So in that case, it's going to change the earth table of the nearby area. So I don't see any risk assessment or any plan of how do we control this kind of risk.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. There are conditions and it has been assessed, and there are conditions of consent that deal with construction and geotechnical aspects.
Sorry, can you expand that again?
The application would have considered the geotechnical implications of construction as part of the application.
Yep.
And there are conditions of consent which deal with that particular aspect and things that have to be done at certain stages. It's common practice in these applications. So I can assure you that it has been covered, and I will ask the applicant to clarify that.
Yeah, that's fine, because it's didn't mention in the report. That's why I'm asking.
Page 19. This application has been reviewed by Council's geotechnical engineer in relation to site stability and the suitability of the site for development. Appropriate conditions have been recommended.
That's what I mean. It's very general comments. All I'm asking is details of risk assessment or the plan in the future. Because I'm worried about if there's something not done correctly, we're going to under the risk of our foundation movement of our building. So based on that many examples happen in Sydney construction site, Mascot, Olympic Park, everywhere, I'm trying to ask where's the responsibility going to go. So the last point is basically about the privacy of our building. I guess you're going to say the same again. You're going to follow the apartment construction guide or whatever guide, without considering the Australian National Building Code. So because of a tall building in front of us gonna build over there, we're gonna lose all the privacy in our unit. So which means we'll probably need to again upgrade some of the things in our building to improve our privacy, and we lost a lot of opportunities to use our balcony because of the privacy issue.
I'd just like to clarify, this is a high-density area, and it's expected there are going to be apartment buildings. And the expectation for apartment buildings of the height that they are is that they be, the height they are should be 18 metres from window to window. Mm-hmm. You've just told me that you're at least 40 metres away. That is,
I think it's,
yeah, it's nearly double
away, yeah,
what is anticipated to be the control at the height that they are.
I understand
are.
That. But even like an example, we can see through people in that building just behind us. So when we bought this building, when we bought the unit inside the building, there's nothing. There's a very open area in front of us.
I
That's part
that.
Of the reason why we buy. But now there's another building that's going to go up in front of us that's going to impact our lives.
Yep.
So what are the considerations that has been put in place?
The considerations are, are to test the application against the controls that apply, that would have applied on your building as well, to consider the zoning of the land, which allows apartment buildings to 60 metres pretty much on every piece of land in and around the area. Yours was obviously built in that context too. And there are certain separation criteria, which is there to address privacy, overshadowing, and in this respect, I'm pretty sure that this particular application exceeds the minimum standards in those separation distances from what I've had a look at. So they do satisfy those criteria.
Okay. If that's in the report, I'm happy to have a read through. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions or clarifications? Thank you.
Just, Ms. Yang, can you show me this map where your building is?
On the other side of the road.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Ron Knowles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ronald Charles Knowles, and I live at 817 Church Street, Wollongong, which is on Smith's Hill, which is another area of high density development. Now I'll start.
Okay.
To the Chair and the panel, I express my thanks for the opportunity to speak. I did address the Joint Regional Planning Panel, JRPP, on a different DA for this particular site. I spoke of the need to address the cumulative impact of large-scale developments in the local area and the need for public urban space. I challenged the Chair, Ms. Pam Allen, and the Deputy Chair, Ms. Anne McCabe, to not just be a committee looking at development application approving authority, but also to look at good planning and, if need be, make additional comments to Council. I do not believe that Council's senior planning staff, including the then Director of Planning, understood what I was putting forward. As a bit of a background, I was the only one that really challenged the very high heights and floor space ratios in the 2007 LEP developed by Mr. Chris Johnson. I challenged him as to why the heights and the floor space ratios were so significantly greater than Gosford, Penrith, Newcastle and Liverpool, who had DAs and LEPs developed at the same time. He just said, that's what we think's right. I also know in the last fortnight has issued a draft document, and I realise it's only a draft document and therefore may not have as much legal significance as the LEP, the Wollongong City Centre Urban Design Framework. This seems to emphasise that the human scale or element with reduced heights and more public space is the proposed planning principles that Council will have exhibited and most likely will adopt depending on public submissions. Whilst it is only a draft document, and I trust that you have had the opportunity to read this document, I trust that the panel will give serious consideration to it and what it suggests. During the 1980s, I worked in the Australian Square Building designed by Harry Seaver. In my opinion, and a lot of other people, its biggest success was the large public area around it, enabling people to be in either sunshine or shade, and also to be undercover in case of rain or out in the open. My three major concerns with this development are: one, the off-street motor vehicle parking. I noticed that there are 64 units and the car parking was calculated on the basis of 16 by 0.06 plus 42 times 09 plus 6 times 1.4. The 06 is for one bedroom unit, the 09 for two bedroom units, and the 1.3 for three bedroom units, giving a total of 55.8 car spaces. This would not mean that there is each unit have its own car parking space. I note that the applicant is proposing 64 spaces, the additional 8 which council has included in the floor space ratio. Whilst I personally support reduced motor vehicle dependence, and I admit that I don't even have a driver's license, I believe it is essential that all units must have at least one car space. Often car spaces or garages are used for many other purposes, including storage. I note that where I live in Smith Hill, we're remaining getting 8-storey buildings with 1.5 floor space ratio. In some weeks, I have had to ring the Wollongong Police Station up to 3 times as motor vehicles are parked in the bus stop at 2325 Church Street. Although council wants to get rid of the motor vehicle, I don't think they ever will. With alternative sources like hydrogen or electricity and the likelihood of those car prices coming down, even the petrol-driven vehicle will be replaced by another type of motor vehicle. Two, public open space. The document, Draft Wollongong City Centre Urban Design Framework, gives strong support to public open space. For example, on page 9, and I will quote, it gives priority to the delivery of high-quality street and public spaces to support the, brackets, public life of our community. The words that council has put in this document on exhibition. Yet, the area which I shall call the northwest section of CBD, bounded by Smith, here at Crown Street and the South Coast Railroad, has no, now we emphasise that, no public space. The last public space in this area was the green grass area on the corner of Victoria and Belmore Street. It was removed to provide hard service car park as part of a development application that was the subject of the ITAC inquiry, which led to the dismissal of our election council. Yet, there are three multi-storey residential developments underway in this area, already with 341 residential units. This DA adds an additional 64 units, and yet there is no provision for public open space. I noted there was some concern by council staff about the community open space. The last issue is that at ground level, the whole site will be built on. No public space at ground level. This policy of a podium base from boundary to boundary with a tower block, in my opinion, must be abandoned and public space at ground level be provided. I thank the panel for giving me the privilege to speak, and I trust that these new documents being put out by council, although in draft form, may have some influence either on the panel or likely PAs to be lodged in the near or long distance future. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Knowles. I think your constant lobbying has been heard by council, and they might be doing, as we've always suggested to you when you make these submissions to these buildings, is that it's the future you need to aim for, and it seems like you might have been heard. But in relation to this particular application, as I'm sure you're aware, we have to deal with it under the controls that exist and lawfully exist at the moment. Thank you. So now I have Robert Giese and Luke Rollinson here to answer any questions. Do you want to come? going to grab some other chairs. Yeah, thanks. Thank you. A couple, just to clarify some of the aspects. Parking, are you providing 89 parking spaces?
Yeah, so there's 58 from memory.
58 residential, right.
And there's 12 visitor plus the commercial.
And what is your mix of dwellings site, roughly?
Yep, so we have 6 one bedders, 2 one bed studios, 40 two bedders, and 12 three bedders.
Okay, so you're assuming, one would assume that the studios and all the ones would not necessarily have a parking space.
Yeah.
Okay, from an affordability perspective.
And this site is within good proximity to the train station.
Okay, thank you. And I note that there is a contribution, Section 94 contribution of $300,000+, and I'm assuming that, consistent with Council's contributions plan, that would part of that would be for public open space provision. Is that correct?
Yep.
Correct. Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
I think it might be useful if you can briefly respond to the very detailed comments that were made by the design review panel. You've done a lot in response to them, some areas more than others. Can you briefly describe the way you approached those comments?
Okay.
just in relation to the geotechnical issues that Ms. Yang raised, you submitted a geotechnical report by EI Australia that you will undertake by virtue of a condition of consent, a dilapidation report for all structures located within the zone of influence, so i.e. all the buildings which are in the zone of influence of the ground surface material and public areas. All excavations will need to be supported during and after construction to protect adjoining properties and nearby existing development, and no disturbance of ground is to occur beyond the site boundaries. And to answer the question that is always asked, who's responsible for that? You are responsible for that. So the applicant is responsible for that.
And the PCA.
The engineer is responsible to ensure that that occurs properly, and the paperwork will be given to the PCA. The PCA is not an engineer.
And
there is a separate one too.
Well.
Correct. So it's doubled up. Steve? Any questions? Anything else? No? Thank you. Thank you very much. So as I said before, we will go on to the next item and we'll make a decision on this after the meeting closes. Thank you very much. Thank you for that. Moving your own chairs. Thank you. Okay, so we'll now move on to item two, which is lot 2 and 3, Sturdy Avenue, Bulleye. I do struggle to see why it's Sturdy Avenue. Well, we couldn't quite find it in Sturdy Avenue, but that's neither here nor there. I have Lisa Moore. Is she still an apology? Yes. So Anthony Horniman, please come forward.
Yep.
Yep.
However, what's my concern?
Just to clarify things, have you looked at the conditions? There are more conditions about asbestos removal on this application than I've seen on many, and pretty much every development, even to a domestic house, has some form of asbestos issues and some form of asbestos that needs to be removed. I remarked earlier that I got a note in my letterbox from the house that's being demolished immediately next door to me saying the asbestos is going to be removed on so-and-so day. It is normal, common, and understood practice about the removal of asbestos. There is a requirement to have a licensed asbestos removal, and I can assure you, you can see these people, you know they're there because they're the ones that look like they're looking after coronavirus at the moment. They're the ones fully covered from head to toe. And so it's in their own best interest to remove the asbestos safely and appropriately, and they are appropriately gowned. And the applicant is nodding his head. There is absolutely no reason to believe that this would not occur on this application like it occurs on every other application where asbestos may be, which is, in the case, you know that we know that it's on two buildings, I understand, is that correct? Possibly on two buildings, but not in all of the buildings, so it's not across the whole site, it's only on a couple of buildings, but we know that this matter is being addressed and there are very strong conditions of consent about that. Likewise, in terms of traffic movement, condition 20 limits that no traffic movements to occur between 8 and 9.30 and 2.30 and 4pm to avoid their concern about children moving to and from school. And also vehicles travelling north must use Bullite Pass for northbound traffic, and vehicles are not to use Lawrence Hargrave Drive travelling north as a haulage route. Now, obviously, vehicles have to get in and out, and they have to travel on a road. They are public roads, and they have a right to use a public road. But in terms of amenity and to protect amenity, there's been a condition placed on it. Now, I'm sure the residents will notice a vehicle that is not following that, and the first thing they'll do, no doubt, will be pick up the phone. So that is the ultimate enforcement tool. And the applicant will know if they go the wrong way, someone will tell someone. So that's invariably the strongest enforcement. In terms of damage to the roads, as I said, it's a public road. Roads are used by all sorts of shapes and size of vehicles, and I don't suppose there's a load limit on the road, so any vehicle can travel down any road. If any particular damage specifically attributed to a particular activity or vehicle can be attributed to damage, then they are liable to it. But these are public roads, so don't assume that there will be any damage on these particular movements. There are relatively few movements. Perhaps the applicant can 16. Is that six? 16 movements. That's just eight vehicles.
Eight.
Yeah. Over what period?
10 hours.
Sorry. How long will it take? How long will it take to demolish? Yeah, I would have thought it'd be quicker than that, having seen what you've got to deal with. Yeah. So I suspect it won't be as bad as you're envisaging it. You won't. No, you haven't. Well, they don't know. No, they don't know at the moment because they haven't tendered it, and you wouldn't tender this process beforehand.
Okay.
No, not necessarily, because you can have a double bogey or a single bogey or a whole range. Yeah. And again, the bigger the truck, the shorter the time period. The smaller the truck, the longer the time period. So it's horses for courses. But I understand your concern, but there'll probably be more trucks when you're actually building the development than removing this material. Because they're only taking the they're not excavating, they're only taking the material. It is out of scope of this application. Well, at the moment, that bridge is not in question. Okay, any other questions?
No.
Okay, thank you. And perhaps the applicant can come out now, please. Just to answer questions if there are any. Any questions beyond what I've already jumped in and asked?
Has there been any thought about the likely size of vehicles?
Looking at the traffic report, they have considered lead vehicles and light vehicle movements, but I don't think it's specific to what's been
contamination, dust suppression, asbestos?
Yes, I looked at one of the two parts of the day for
yes. Yep.
Yeah, so I guess if you don't mind, I just want to clarify the ASMAT report also identifies the two other cabinets, so it's sort of a note address to conditions that can set 29.
Question for the applicant, would you accept a condition requiring signage to be placed on the